Governor Baker announced today that Massachusetts's phased reopening could begin as early as next week. Phase one of a statewide reopening is now potentially just days away.
To help businesses start to prepare for reopening, today we're announcing a four-phased approach that Massachusetts will use to reopen. We're also announcing the mandatory workplace safety standards that all employers across all industries will need to adopt and adhere to.
Yet, as of yesterday, the city of Boston has had more than 11,000 cases of COVID-19. 500 have died, and nearly 8,000 are still sick. So reopening in Boston will inevitably be slow. Just take it from Mayor Marty Walsh, who announced Friday that no parades or festivals will take place in the city this summer. Mayor Walsh joins us now for our regular check-in, Mondays with the Mayor, and he's taking your calls and questions about how the city is responding to the coronavirus. You can call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Mayor Walsh, welcome back.
Thanks for having me today.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, we had a nice day yesterday, Mother's Day. I hope every mother had a great day. Started with the Mother's Day Walk for Peace, and then I had a chance to brought some food over to my mother and dropped it off for her and saw her for a little bit. And, you know, it's just these are still challenging times for folks. You know, every day seems to be the same, but they're different in some ways, and we just have to continue to be patient and work with each other.
You know, last Thursday, you actually mentioned some good news because that day marked the first time since the city's been counting that there were more recoveries than new cases in Boston. That was a few days ago. Has that trend continued since then?
Well, yeah, we've actually had a couple of days now where our cases, positive cases, have been lower. Today is the lowest since March, 59 positives, bringing our total to 11,106. But, you know, you can't read into one day's information. It really is going to take, you know, we're looking at 14 days of how do we get cases down. But it seems things are, at least initially, and not to get people's hopes up too much, but we are trending in the right way. If we're trending anywhere, we're not trending in the wrong way. We're trending in the right way, which is a good place.
How do you think about, you know, Mayor Walsh, I'm almost picturing it like your foot on a gas pedal and going back and forth between the pedal and the brake. So you get a couple of days of good information, but as you say, you need larger trends. You know, people really are anxious to expand their movement, open up the economy, but you also don't want to let up too soon. How do you think about managing that constant tension?
It really is a day at a time, and you can't take one day's numbers and expect that, oh, we've turned the corner here. I'll give an example. This time last week, over the weekend, we had a couple of days that were lower. We went from the 200-plus positives to 130, I think, and 140 back-to-back days. And then, you feel, oh, this is great. And then I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, the numbers jumped back up again. And it really is about monitoring and continuing to talk about social physical distancing and how we move forward. And as we think about reopening the economy, how do we put something in place that, because cases are going to continue to rise and go up and down, fluctuate. But when we reopen the economy, understanding that, in my opinion, we really probably shouldn't or can't shut it down again. So we have to think about how do we isolate and track people and use all the contact tracing and stuff like that to really monitor these cases moving forward.
How do you think about the role of both contact tracing and testing in keeping the trend down and sort of bringing as much as we can back in the city?
Well, this work has been carried out. It's carried out 7 days a week by public health nurses in our Boston Public Health Commission Infectious Disease Bureau. They provide tracing and follow-up to support confirmed cases. They respond to requests for patient screening and support healthcare partners in screening and evaluating potential people under investigation. So our public health nurses use a wide variety, if you will, of strategies and technologies, including video calling, talking to people, monitoring, and the state's doing as well. And it's important that we continue to do this because this is what's going to give us the understanding of how we're truly doing with the coronavirus. For all intents and purposes, as the governor mentioned in the segment right before this, as we begin to open the state up in four phases, the tracing is going to be so key, tracing and testing. is going to be so key to seeing who had come in contact with the virus and who still tests positive for the virus in order to stop the spread. So, unfortunately, you know, this is unlike anything I've ever dealt with, or most people on this phone, most people listening ever dealt with. You know, this is a virus. It's unpredictable. And I think at the end of the day, it's still going to be about keeping people safe and healthy and alive. It's by doing all the tracing and testing.
I'd love to go to calls if we can. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Susan on the line from Jamaica Plain. Susan, you're on with the mayor.
Hi. Hi, Mayor.
Hi, Susan.
My question to you is, with the cancellations of festivals and the avoidance of having any kind of public gatherings, what is your thoughts on like Blue Hill Pavilion having concerts? And also, what about the Red Sox games?
Yeah, great questions. And I think that, you know, I think as the summer goes on, as we start looking at this virus, everything can be adjusted. I think right now concerts are things that won't happen right now, but I think it's kind of a wait and see approach. I mean, if things start to trend down, if they continue to trend down, we might be in a whole different position in August where we look at what I instituted and we might be able to make some changes in that. The Red Sox, I just read right before I come on the radio, Major League Baseball made an announcement that they want to start the season in July, 82 games, so it would be abbreviated season, and I'm not sure if that's what fans in the stands or not. What they've done in Korea, I believe it's Korea, in their baseball games, is they have no fans. They're pumping in fan noise, and they're pumping in music, so people watching on TV get the feel for a baseball game. So I think a lot of it's still fluid. What I said in the beginning of this is that, you know, every day is very different and very much the same, if that makes any sense to people. But this issue changes so quickly, day to day, week to week. And I think that you can't rule anything out. I wouldn't expect things to happen, but you also can't rule everything out, if that makes any sense. I wish I could be clearer. This is the only time in the world I don't have to be clear and maybe be right when we're talking about this virus.
Mayor Walsh, wouldn't the Sox need to have clearance from you and Governor Baker to be able to put crowds in the stand at Fenway?
Yeah, but like I said, I don't think they're going to have fans in the stands. I think they're going to open baseball without fans. And again, this is July, so they just announced it today. It's a long way from now to then. You know, the governor has some recommendations I believe he's going to put out there on the 18th. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen with the stay-at-home right now advisory. I'm assuming, you know, he'll probably modify it a bit. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen there. Again, I think July is light years away right now in dealing with this virus, so we're not sure the circumstance will be in July. Hopefully we're in a place where it's safer to do a lot more outdoor activities and more gatherings.
What are your questions for Mayor Marty Walsh about where we are in the pandemic, how reopening will happen, about schools, jobs, and the city in general? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mayor Walsh, I'd love to talk about testing for a minute. It's free in Boston. You've got a total of 17 open testing sites listed on the city's website, 4 more to come. People have to call ahead for pre-screening and schedule an appointment. How has that been going? Is everyone who needs or wants a test being able to get tested right now?
Well, I mean, it's not just a random test. The testing, you have to go through the proper protocol through either your healthcare provider or a medical professional. But as of Friday, May 8th, we've been able to do 36,000 tests in the city of Boston. It represents a 29% increase from the week before. Our rate of positives off those tests are 29.4%, which is still pretty high compared to, I think, the state is averaging 20%. We have more than 20 testing sites up and running citywide, and we're ramping up towards a goal of 1,500 tests per day in Boston is where we really want to be to get a true assessment of where we are and where we go here.
The majority of the testing sites are in communities that are disproportionately affected by the virus in Boston. It's worth noting that African Americans make up the majority of positive cases, but a minority of the population in the city at only 24%. How have things like community health centers and racial data helped both in treatment and awareness thus far? And what else do you think needs to be done there?
Well, it helps us in a big way with awareness. I think that, you know, understanding and then trying to find out why in certain communities you have higher rates of testing positive. You know, at one point, Mattapan was the highest in the city. Everything seems to have leveled off a little bit now. And we're doing more testing now in Charlestown, Jamaica Plain, and other places, and we're going to continue to expand our testing. But getting that information really gets us an opportunity to see where people, where the infection is growing. And it goes back to the tracing, trying to stop these big outbreaks. And it's going to help us even more so as we continue tracing, as we think about reopening and finding out where the outbreaks are of the virus and how do you somewhat work to contain that as best as possible.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mayor Walsh, we have Amber on the line from Plymouth, Massachusetts with a question for you. Amber, go ahead.
Hi, Marty Walsh. It seems to me that the mortality rate, even though it can't be 100% scientifically proven yet, it isn't the same as the Black Plague or Ebola, and it just doesn't seem like the right decision. And not everybody was sort of asked about shutting down all the healthy parts of the world. I wondered why there couldn't have been a more hybrid solution, like letting people who want to take the risk and having others stay at home, because as it is now, people who stay at home are still dying anyway. So I just wondered why there wasn't more of a question about something like that.
Well, thank you for the question. I wouldn't necessarily say more people are dying at home now that would have died at home anyway. I wouldn't have. I think what we did was we stopped the spread of the virus in the United States by shutting things down quickly. I think you can look to places like Texas and Georgia and seeing as they lighten their restrictions on places, they're seeing infection rates go higher. There's been studies saying that we potentially could have as many more as 70,000 deaths in the United States by the end of the year if we open too quickly. And I think that it's important for us to take all precautions to keep people safe. I think it's a little more it's easier to, I guess, you know, Monday morning quarterback. But when we're talking about viruses and we watch the trends that happened in China, Wuhan, China, and what happened in Italy and other parts, Spain, other parts of the world, we realize that the United States is probably even a little late to closing things down. If we had done it earlier, we probably would have, you know, cut back on some of the deaths we have and some of the cases. I think that, you know, I'm not going to question right now a judge. We should have. We can't go back and fix history, but I actually think we should have shut things down. Now, looking back, the one thing I will say, we should have shut things down sooner and earlier.
You know, so you raising this issue, Mayor Walsh, as did Amber, the caller, about the discretionary aspects of these public health decisions, these public policy decisions. One of the ones in the Commonwealth that's been fairly stark is the difference between those who have mandated face masks and those who have requested or recommended face masks. Different mayors have done different things. What to make of that distinction? And it doesn't, unless I'm incorrect, we could find no confirmation that you had mandated face masks before the May 6th decision by Governor.
No, we didn't. And I had some concerns around it. Renee Graham from the Boston Globe did a great piece the other day about what happened in Los Angeles, New York, and a few other cities, in enforcement of the face mask, people being arrested and physically brought down. And I think that, you know, in some of these cases, it's incumbent upon individuals to put their safety at first and put the safety of others first. And I was asking people to wear face masks. I think that, again, there's still people in the United States and here in Massachusetts that aren't wearing face masks. And to me, it's baffling that they're not putting their own health above everything else or putting the health of other people. So again, we're asking people to wear face masks. It's a mandated order by the governor. And you know, we're enforcing that as best we can. But again, I just think there's also an equity piece of it that I'm concerned about.
You know, the governor made his announcements about the four phases of reopening, which will happen hopefully sometime around May 18th for phase one. What do you make of those four phases? Did you work with him on those other than through your chief of staff, who's, I know, a member of the advisory board? What do you make of the plan?
I mean, we have a long conversation. I think that's an appropriate way to approach this now, looking at four different phases of reopening. I think that as we think about opening up any industry or any area of whether it's business or social gatherings, it has to be slow and steady. And I think that the appropriate conversations are happening, and hopefully as we continue to put these different buckets of businesses together to open up, I think they're going to have to be thought through. As I said, we only have one shot at getting this right, and you know, what I don't want to see is a situation where we open up like what I'm hearing in Georgia, where they opened up everything really quickly, and then all of a sudden their cases are spiking right now again, at least a little bit, I guess, from what I understand. That's not a situation that we can, that's not going to be healthy to the economy here in Boston and Massachusetts, and I think it's a good approach to take.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask a question of Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. We have Cheryl on the line from Woburn. Cheryl, you are on with Marty Walsh.
Yes, hi, Mayor Walsh. You're doing a great job. I really appreciate your level of concern with the governor. And I work as a dental hygienist. I'm very concerned about not only the staff and myself going forward once we open, but I'm very concerned about the patients walking in. We have read the protocols that are supposed to go into place once we do reopen, but I think without proper ventilation and excavation of the aerosol particles in the air, the patients are going to be very vulnerable to the virus. And because we can't see where that virus is in the air. My question is, have you had a discussion yet about when dentist's office can actually reopen so that the general public are not put in such vulnerable positions?
Well, first of all, thank you for that. I appreciate your input and expertise in that area, because that's something that's really important for us to listen to the people that actually, the professionals that actually do this work. I have not had a conversation yet, but I'm assuming, and I shouldn't assume, but I will make sure after this call that my public health department has been in contact with not just the state public health department, but also maybe some of the folks in the area around Boston the dentists and the hygienists and things like that. So I will look into that. I don't have an answer on that directly, but I will look into that. And if you'd like to contact my public health department, please feel free. Just let them know that you can call them directly and just tell them that you spoke to me on the radio today.
So, Mayor Walsh, before we let you go, let's talk about construction for a second as well. The governor is now saying that as we move forward, we'll be in a position where it won't be essential versus non-essential businesses, but really just can businesses succeed in maintaining the kind of safety standards that the state wants. How are you thinking about construction, given today's announcements and the other deliberations that have been going on?
Well, we've been working really closely with the construction industry, and we have protocols for resuming construction that are going in place. Starting on the 18th of May, work being done in Boston on hospitals, public schools, residential buildings, 1 to 3 units, road work, utility work, and other open outdoor air work like roofing or essential projects can resume if they have the proper safety protocol in place and the paperwork submitted. So we came up with a system that is very stringent and very welcomed by the contractors and the developers, which is good to hear. The second part of that, ideally, and again, it could all change, that on the 26th, all essential construction would resume if they have the proper safety plans in place and paperwork submitted on the date. That's what our plan is today. Now, I say that as we started earlier, saying that, you know, this has been a very fluid situation. When we think we have, a couple of days of down numbers, it spikes again. So we're going to be tracking the numbers all this week, next week. Next week, obviously, next Monday night. Monday will be the first day of construction in that first category. We'll see how that works, and then we'll notify companies on the 26th if we're moving forward with it.
So we don't have time to go to another caller, Mayor Walsh, but in our last minute with
one more caller,
Dave from West Roxbury.
I'll take one more caller.
All right, let's get Dave. Can we pull up Dave from West Roxbury? It might take our team a second to do it because we weren't expecting you to be able to take
another call. We'll get one more.
Give me
just
a second.
And I'll be a few minutes late.
Dave, are you there? Thanks.
Mayor, what happened to the antibody test that you were taking about 2 weeks ago? You were going to do some high-impact areas and like 1,500 people. I never heard any results. Do you have results?
Good question.
Okay.
That came up in my city council call today as well. We don't have the results on in yet. Mass General, we were still testing some people as of last week. We hadn't hit the number that we wanted to hit. It was 1,000 people, and I believe that the numbers will come out this week. We're just waiting to get those last few people in there. That's a great question, and that was the same question that came up in my city council call this morning.
And that is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. We really appreciate you joining us today, and take good care this week.
Thank you. All right, talk to you soon.
Governor Charlie Baker this afternoon outlined a four-phased approach toward reopening the Massachusetts economy.
We'll continue to follow the data and the public health metrics to determine when phase one start of reopening begins and then when it's safe to move on to concurrent phases after that. The goal is to begin this process around May 18th.
Now, just before the governor's press conference, we talked to one of the people who's advising him on this approach. East Hampton Mayor Nicole LaChapelle is one of a 17-member advisory board on reopening. It's a group tasked with helping the administration come up with strategies to reopen the economy in phases and based on health and safety metrics. LaChapelle started by telling us about being the only elected official from Western Massachusetts on the board.
It's a tremendous responsibility, and I have to thank my regional partners and fellow mayors, but also community stakeholders and also industry representatives out here for really helping me fill in the gaps after major industry presentations on the advisory board. It's been so helpful to bring that local perspective to what we're hearing from, you know, statewide organizations, how it specifically affects or does not affect Western Massachusetts, because the state advisory board report on the 18th is going to provide guidance of a phased approach, but also will have a wide berth of discretion for cities and towns across the state and certainly in Western Mass to make those safety and health metrics really pinpoint to the constituencies that we all represent out here.
So does that mean you might imagine a phased rollout where Western Massachusetts is ahead in some of the things that it's doing over cities like Boston? I know we've heard Governor Baker say it doesn't make sense to have a regional strategy.
And that's a big conversation on the advisory board, the pros and cons of that. But it's definitely in consideration. In the next week, this coming week, we'll hear more updated public health reporting. We'll hear different safety metrics that are possible and what we'll tie to. And I think that really influences a regional approach versus, say, an industry approach. But when you go back, no matter what approach is taken, it's really driven by testing and contact tracing and a clear and consistent supply chain of PPE.
One of the iconic questions anymore seems to be, when can I get a haircut again? I admit I do have some roots I'd like to take care of at some point.
When
will people be able to begin to pursue the rhythm of their everyday lives, do you think?
I think that's guided by public health. What are the number of cases? You know, some of those metrics, I think, have shifted as we see at least treatments that aren't ventilator-based early on or midway through the treatment. You know, so ventilators are certainly a part. The use of ventilators and the availability of ventilators are important for with no uncertainty. But as we see treatment coming through medication, how does that factor in testing and the consistency of testing for frontline workers and retesting, you know, so the normal rhythm of life that we knew, you know, with, let's say, last fall, well, that's never coming back.
How do you imagine some of these really high physical contact types of businesses, let's say a gym or a barber shop, will reopen? What will be really different about the way they operate?
I think you'll see more space between maybe machines or dialing stations. I think it will be a very innovative use of PPEs. I think that hand washing and where you can wash your hands in those facilities will be very different and more frequently placed around the facility. I think too, you know, you look at a barber salon and you compare it to a gym. I mean, we're not sure, but extremely cautious and mindful around droplets and how that may spread this virus and aerosol. Well, the way that that happens in a gym is very different than it might happen in a barbershop. And, you know, so for a gym in particular, you know, what does that look like? I can't remember the last time I went to the gym and I didn't sweat. Not being a fitness buff, I sweat a lot. So I don't know how that looks in the gym. That's a tough one.
Let's talk about the advisory board itself for a minute. When you meet, do you feel like you're missing any points of view? I'm thinking about schools, clergy, human service organizations. There are a lot of kinds of representation outside the world of business that aren't there.
Yeah, well, actually, we're meeting with clergy. I will give a lot of credit to the secretary and lieutenant governor. When that comes to someone's attention or they reach out to one of the advisory board members or the secretary or LG themselves, they're added in. I mean, we had 9 different meetings on Saturday, and those weren't, it's not like the schedule that was announced on the 29th is the schedule we're sticking to. We've added a lot of groups and they continue to be added. And the industry and the not-for-profits and clergy, their presentations are just so thoughtful. And really, I mean, it's such a cliche to think about we're all connected and interconnected, but these presentations are just painting this picture of interconnectivity beyond my wildest dream.
With all these presentations and all the compelling claims that you're hearing from these different groups, how do you balance competing interests? How do you balance all the different needs and the lobbying from all these different kinds of groups?
Yeah, we're looking at industries and groups and services, you know, public services, health services with the same, you know, kind of perspective. And that is, these are the basic things we know have to happen to mitigate infection, right? There's no delusion that there is a way that any of these industries or anything opens without, you know, reinfection. And honestly, every single one of these decisions has a very important and morbid number attached to it, and that's death. You know, we're seeing in these other states that have opened, just dramatically opened industry and just society, and the deaths are starting to come. And so when we're talking to different industries, we're looking at that particular industry and within the industry, different sizes of operations, and what can they actually do? If they had every supply they needed, right, what can they do to meet the best public health standard to prevent infection? And if infection occurs, what is their plan? This is a reopening plan that will be phased, but everybody we're talking to, the question comes up, and it should, is how will you reclose? So what does that do?
And are you developing contingency plans for that? Is that part of your, what's the word I'm looking for, purview to do that, to develop those reclosing contingency plans?
No, I mean, it's a push back onto the industries and the public services, because again, it's just so individualized. It's just so specific. And these industries are presenting, and the public service and daycares and caseworkers and, you know, are really presenting these reopening plans and being brutally candid based on the specifics of how they operate. And so how does a community hospital operate, reopen or reclose compared to Mass General? Completely different. So it's a question that certainly I ask. And I think it's an important, I mean, especially when you're talking small business, reopening brings a very particular risk, and that's infection and shutting that infection down. If it would happen, what does that do to public confidence? What does that do to their business plan? What does that do to the stress already on the workers as well as the public?
So last question for you, Mayor LaChapelle. What should people be expecting to see on May 18th from the advisory board?
I think a very slow phased approach. And I think that phase one, for lack of a better term right now for it, is not a light switch. I don't even know if it's a dimmer. We're doing the best we can in the state to minimize infection, to treat folks in the most cutting edge, with most cutting edge information that we're getting from, you know, the CDC and the infection disease agencies and our amazing hospitals and DPH, and looking at treatment. And certainly we just gain knowledge every single day. But really right now, our best our best response is staying home, is covering your nose and your mouth. That's what it is. That doesn't change on the 18th. And that, I mean, that's where it starts. The reopening plan, you know, the basic best practices start right there.
That was East Hampton Mayor Nicole LaChapelle, who serves on Governor Baker's Reopening Advisory Board. We spoke with her earlier today. Today, Governor Charlie Baker announced a four-stage plan, or four phases, for our state to reopen, possibly beginning as soon as next week. Meanwhile, Rhode Island's stay-at-home order officially ended on Saturday, and that state is now continuing social distancing measures, but some offices, non-critical businesses, even state parks are open there. Retail stores in certain Maine counties can open, and four malls in New Hampshire reopened today. So, as our neighbors begin to open up and we start to plan in earnest for our own opening, seemed like it was a good time to check in with some of our medical experts on what this means and to answer any questions that you might have. So call. What are your questions for today's panel of medical experts? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Now joining us on the line is Dr. Shira Durone, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Durone, good to have you back. Thank you.
Good to be here.
And also with us is Lenny Marcus, founding co-director of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard Chan School of Public Health and the Kennedy School of Government. Thanks for joining us again, Lenny Marcus. Good to have you.
Sienna, happy to be with you.
So let me just ask the two of you, what are your reactions to the states opening up around us right now?
Well, this is a step in the right direction. And I think there are several elements of this that are very important. First off, it's a very clear step-by-step approach. And one of the important elements that's built into it is the notion that we're going to move backwards if people aren't compliant with the recommendations and the constraints and restrictions of each phase. So in many ways, this is a grand experiment that's dependent on individual compliance. If we can keep our numbers down, we'll be able to move from one phase to the next. And if not, we could find ourselves moving backwards.
And Dr. Durone, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I agree completely. We are not at a stage where the infection is gone from society. We're not at a stage where it's no longer circulating. We are still very much at a stage where there's a lot of infection out there, and it is very possible to see the numbers rise right back up to where they were when all of these measures were put in place and when hospitals were, you know, getting sort of close to overwhelmed, although we never got totally overwhelmed here in Massachusetts. So without a lot of continued effort by everyone in society, we are really in a situation where we have to be really careful because we could see all of those measures ratcheting right back down and driving us right back inside.
All right. Well, the calls are already just pouring in, so I want to go ahead and get to them. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your coronavirus question of Lenny Marcus and Dr. Sheila Durone. We've got Don on the line from Cambridge. Don, you are up. What's your question?
What's the state of the art and the future for home testing specimen collection for both tests, for testing for current infections and testing for previously infected?
Yeah,
thanks for that question, Don.
I can take a stab at that. So there are some exciting technologies out there being worked on, being scaled up around home testing. One of the most exciting, I think, is PCR-based testing. The PCR is the test that we've been using mostly with a nasal swab, but PCR-based testing using saliva. And that's easy because you spit into some kind of a tube and you put it in the mail and you send it off. And that really gets the test right into people's hands where they need it. It means you don't have to, you know, get in your car and drive to some testing site when you're feeling ill. It means that you don't even have to drive somewhere where you're not feeling ill, but you just have a sore throat or a runny nose, which a lot of people, you know, aren't willing to do. And so what we really need to get a handle on this virus is that kind of widely available testing that people can just do anytime they think they might have any symptoms. On the serology side, there is some technology being developed that could allow people to do like a finger prick blood test at home. That's the antibody test that tells you if you have had it. Theoretically, that could be used for things like, you know, people have talked about the immunity passport, or, you know, being allowed to, you know, having people who have already had the virus be allowed to be out and about more so than people who haven't yet. But the sensitivity and specificity of the test characteristics are just not good enough yet to be able to do that.
All right, let's take another question. 1-800. Oh, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Just jump in. We've put a lot of emphasis on testing, and I think if we have those tests available, it'll be a big plus. We have to distinguish, though, that even though we have testing, it's still important to maintain social distancing, to wear the mask. The test is not a cure. The test is just simply a diagnostic.
Okay, I'm going to go back to a call. And Lenny Marcus, we're having a little bit of trouble with your sound. I'm wondering if that's something that we'll be able to work on while I take another call here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I have Ellen on the line from Brookline. Ellen, what's your question?
I'm a 69-year-old type 2 diabetic. And so I know the fact that I have diabetes, that I know alone makes me more vulnerable than I normally would be. So if I, let's say, went to the town of Brookline public health, would they, you know, like with public health department, would I be able to get a test there or what?
So, Dr. Durone, we're still trying to get Lenny's sound back, so let me just turn that one to you.
Sure, yeah. So the public health departments could probably direct you to where a test can be done in the area where you live, but they're generally not at this point. They're certainly not doing them at the public health department. And they're generally not doing tests now for people without symptoms. So that PCR test, it tells you whether you have the infection right now. If you got that test today, it would only tell you whether you have the infection today. And then as soon as you walk out of there, you're going to wonder, you know, if you have the infection tomorrow. And so it's really not necessarily practical to test everyone you know, with any frequency that's going to be that helpful right now. Again, that's where something like an at-home test might come into play, because maybe we could get to a place where there's enough testing to be testing people without symptoms on a frequent basis. Now, this antibody test that we were talking about, if we could get those test characteristics to a place where they're really valuable, that could tell us if somebody has had the infection, and then they can stop. Now, the other really difficult thing about the antibody test is we actually don't know if you have antibodies right now, whether those antibodies are sufficient to protect you from future infection, and if so, for how long. So those are all the reasons why the antibody tests right now are just not ready for prime time.
And we do have Lenny Marcus back with us.
Yes, I'm back with you.
Great, thank you. Before I go to the next call, let me just ask you to kind of try to characterize, if you can at this point, I don't know if it's a scale of 1 to 10 or how you want to do it, but how essential is quality and widespread testing to our ability to move forward?
It's absolutely critical for us to know what we're dealing with. Policymakers are having to make important decisions about opening businesses, about opening offices, public transportation, and the better the data that they have about the disease that's spreading across the population, the better will be their decisions. We're right now, from a policy perspective, making good guesswork decisions. We simply don't know what the future is like. However, these tests will provide policymakers critical information, in particular as these tests provide trending information. So it's not simply what we get for today or tomorrow, it's what happens over days and weeks and months that provide us the best data upon which decision-making can be made.
Thank you. Calls just keep coming in, so let's keep taking them. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I have Michael on the line from Cambridge. Michael, what's your question?
Hi. You know, I know we hear a lot about, of course, social distancing and covering our mouths and nose, but what about our eyes? I understand the eyes are quite vulnerable as a place where we could contract. So what about, should we be wearing sunglasses or goggles or something as well?
Great question. we do cover our eyes here in the hospital, certainly when we are taking care of patients who have COVID. We've actually moved at my hospital to more of a universal approach to eye protection. So we're wearing eye protection whenever we're anywhere with patients, so not even necessarily during patient care. The mask or the face covering that people wear, you know, because it contains their cough and their breathing, largely should make it so that you don't need the eye protection as much. And certainly when you combine that with the distancing, the 6-foot distancing, that helps as well. There are some epidemiologists who think that the future state is everyone wearing a face shield as opposed to everyone wearing a mask. So that's eye protection that, you know, goes down and covers both your mouth and your nose and your eyes, and that actually might be the most effective way and actually perhaps preferred from a social standpoint because you can see people's facial expressions better. So that's something that's been put out there as a proposal for the future.
And Michael, it's important to remember that your hand can bring the virus up to your face and can get inside you. So one of the purposes of the mask is to discourage you from touching your face, especially if your hand isn't protected.
And what of this constant tension that we hear about the mask is to, you know, protect you and protect others, and yet we tend to touch our faces more when we're wearing masks because we're adjusting them and we're aware of them, et cetera.
It's a good reminder to be careful with touching your face and a good reminder to wash your hands very frequently and just to have your own personal behaviors and your personal attention to reduce the possibility that you're going to transfer the virus from your hands into your body.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Marilyn on the line from Brookline. Marilyn, what's your question?
I've been hearing about diarrhea as an early symptom of disease. I'm wondering if some people just get diarrhea and nothing else.
Is that still possible? Okay, let's turn to Dr. Derone.
Yeah, we do see patients whose only symptom is diarrhea. Now, is it possible that they have diarrhea from another reason and they actually have asymptomatic COVID? It's possible. But we do know that there is a decent percentage of patients who present with diarrhea as part of the disease. And we know that there are patients that don't have respiratory symptoms. So, you know, I think it is possible that if diarrhea is your only symptom, it could represent COVID.
Are there other single symptoms like that, Dr. Derone, that we should know about?
Well, the loss of smell and taste can be very profound and can be the only symptom in some patients.
All right, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got our experts here. Keep the calls coming. We'll get your questions answered if we can. Suzanne is on the line from Concord. Suzanne, what's your question?
Hi, I am a child care provider and hoping to go back to work taking care of children. And I'm gravely concerned about the appropriate PPE to wear and what other equipment should we be wearing?
Great question.
Very good question. As we know, children spread disease quite readily, and so I definitely understand your concern. We also know that, you know, children tend to not manifest a lot of symptoms of this virus, and so they could be asymptomatic carriers who are transmitting infection. And it's tough. It's very tough. So, you know, the face covering or mask, I would probably recommend eye protection in your case, especially since, you know, kids might be, you know, spitting and slobbering. And then, you know, I think one thing about PPE, personal protective equipment, is this question about gloves. Do they help or do they hurt? You know, if you think of it as something that's protective, but then again, like we talked about before, but you touch your face with them because you somehow feel that you're protected because you're wearing gloves, it can actually hurt because people don't tend to do hand hygiene over gloves where they do remember that they need to do hand hygiene on their hands. Personally, for me, I prefer to just use bare hands. And then whenever I've touched something that somebody else has touched or whenever I've touched somebody else, I don't touch my face until I've cleaned my hands.
So, Suzanne, do you have any concerns that that level of PPE will be frightening or disturbing to the kids in childcare?
Yeah. Was that question for me?
It was.
Yes, I am very concerned. I would like to wear the face shield because I think I can talk to children and see them and smile at them. I just don't know if that's an appropriate thing to wear as opposed to a face mask. I'm very confused.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. You know, the data aren't as robust about the level of protection, but like I said, there are some epidemiologists who are really favoring the use of a face shield over a face mask for this virus.
So we're out of time for calls. I do apologize. We have full lines, and I'm sorry we won't be able to get to more. We have just a minute or two left. And Lenny Marcus, before we go, I did want to ask you, how do we think about the social dimensions of the sets of steps we're going to have to take to return? How quickly can we as humans adjust to the scope of the changes we have to start putting one foot in front of the other again?
That's a really important question. And we've had a lot of experience. We're in week 9 of the social distancing strategies that were put in place way back in early March. So we've learned a lot. And I think it's important for everyone to really take a mirror to themselves, take a mirror to their families and their loved ones and their the places where they work, and ask themselves the questions about how they can successfully take the next step. And so I think the governor and the state are giving us some really good recommendations of a step-by-step process, always reminding us that we also could go backwards. So everything that we can put in place to remind ourselves to stay on track is absolutely critical in going forward.
And in the last 30 seconds or so, Dr. Shira Durone, what other thoughts would you want to share with our listeners today?
I think I would just share that it's just been hard for so many people, everyone really, and some more than others. We can be excited about the reopening. We should be cautiously optimistic, though, because there may be some pumping of the brakes. There may be some reopenings and some reclosings over the next months or even years, and this is our new normal.
And that's Dr. Shira Durone, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks for coming back and joining us, Dr. Durone.
Thank you.
And Lenny Marcus, founding director of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, which is a joint program of the Harvard Chan School of Public Health and the Kennedy School of Government. Thanks for being with us again today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.